Hi, this is Sharon Jones of Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings here on Groovement with Agent J.
Okay, so I'm with the Dap Kings. Neil, the history of the Dap Kings has been sort of quite well documented for those people that want to look that way. And on the Daptone website, what's the website address, by the way?
DaptoneRecords.com.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about what's going on label-wise at the moment? Because I notice the new couple of labels. What's going on with 45s at the moment?
Well, we just released the first Naomi Shelton and the Gospel Queens 45. You may remember Naomi Shelton as Naomi Davis from Promised Land, which was, I think, DAP 1007. Normally in the US we'd say 1007, but in the UK we'd say 1007. Anyways.
Have they all been re-released recently?
We did. We actually ended up, due to popular demand, which was something that we weren't quite sure was going to work, but is working out really well. We did do a limited repress of the first probably 12 45s that went out of print pretty early on in the label career. So we repressed everything on maroon labels, so you can just see who had the who had the first pressing and who didn't. But the fact that the fact that their demand was there and that they're selling quite well is really inspiring for us to realize that when you talk to other people, it's like, oh, 7 inches, you guys are crazy. How can you afford to do that? And it's just been really what's kept the doors of the label open. It's started as like what the sort of foundation of the label, and it's still, no matter what we do, a real important part of the profile and what we want to be doing. And we'll continue to do it, and we'll continue to, press 7 inches and decide after that whether it's worth moving forward with LPs by particular artists. But it's a real good way to gauge, how our relationship with different people are. For instance, we might be doing a 7-inch with Barbara Lynn in the near future. But that's, it's going to be an amazing opportunity to see how things gel and if that goes well, doing LPs.
Did it sort of become apparent that the Dap Kings were what you wanted to focus on from the label? Was that because of sales, or was it because of live shows and reputation, rather, album-wise, rather than, because you're a limited independent label, there's a certain amount of money, isn't it? It costs money to make albums.
Well, it's not necessarily the money, it's just the, it's time, and because it's a tricky situation. It's like it's a family situation where you have the Dap Kings, and inside the Dap Kings you have the Budos, basically key members of the Budos band, Binky Griptite and the Mellomatics, the Sugarman 3, what was the Mighty Imperial. So the Dap Kings are kind of, I always saw it as like a group of leaders in their own right, which is probably why, the group sounds real good. It's that people aren't really focused on trying to outdo each other. It's more about, making the music go first. And fortunately for the band, it's what is a real important part of the group. But unfortunately for production of new records, it takes up a lot of our time. So we really are focusing on what releases we really want to do and how we're going to put them out and when we're going to put them out. But there's definitely a lot of music in the future. It's just a matter, it is the same thing. Like, for instance, Tommy's sitting here and we're struggling, like, there's fine time to put out, we're trying to get the Minahan Street Band album out. Binky, we've been working on his album and a slew of 45s that'll be coming out, and that's been the most frustrating part of it, especially with the success of Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings band basically on the road almost all the time at this point. Looking forward to that, not that winding down necessarily, but being able to focus on particular gigs and then being able to focus on making records in the studio. And babies, yeah, there's a lot of babies coming in the mix, yeah.
Bosco, or is it Gabe? I was going to ask you about the difference between, obviously, touring so much, or your satisfaction with the live sound that you're going to get at every different venue with every different system, and the sound that you have on record.
I don't know. It's. I think the thing is, the live sound is a completely different experience seeing the band live, And I think what you experience seeing the band live is not really as sensitive to, exactly the tone of one guitar, or if the snare is a little too loud, or if, even if something's like a little out of tune, it's not going to really ruin the show. It's more about the energy, and the whole room is kind of sweating, jumping around. Whereas the record, you may be listening to it loud in the party and everybody's sweaty, but you also may be, sitting in a library with your headphones on, writing a paper. And then you're going to sit there and say, oh, man, that sounds awful. So you got to get that right. So I think it's much less sensitive, live sound, I don't think it has that much. It also has a lot more to do with live sound, is that it doesn't all have to be coming through the PA system. A lot of it has to do with just the sound of the instruments. A lot of what's in the room is just, especially in a smaller room, it's the sound of the instruments. So, and this band has naturally, not just individually, everybody has really good sounds, but also as a band, there's a certain blend that guys have from playing together for a long time. In the horn section can blend themselves to a certain point, so that it's not necessary to have some genius behind the mixing board, moving everything exactly right.
And for those people that are listening that might not know too much about your sort of production technique, do you want to just sort of very quickly give us a sum up of your sound?
We have a recording approach that's kind of more about getting sounds live. You know, when we're tracking, we try to make everything sound how we want it on the record. And we try not to leave a lot of decisions for later on, like, oh, we can fix that in the mix. We try to use, you know, for example, we use fewer microphones and get more, as many blends as we can have, you know, to some extent, is whatever blends we can actually create live, you know, putting up one microphone and letting the horns blend themselves as opposed to three and putting fewer mics on the drum set and stuff like that. Now, we use tape machines and some stuff, but we don't have a crazy amount of fancy vintage equipment or anything, but we just kind of have a more traditional approach to how we're recording it, you know, just letting the sounds of the musicians and their instruments kind of, you know, naturally sit in the right place and just trying to capture that.
Tell us a little bit about the two new 45 labels that have started up.
Well, no, come on now. So the, pardon me, my face is greasy with funky chicken. The two Eversoul is a project that we're doing to try to release some old stuff. A guy, Dave Griffiths, has brought us some stuff, and between Modo and that Hank Mullins 45, we're starting to get into a few more reissue things. So that's not the main focus of the label. We definitely when people come to us with some really good stuff like that, and we're able to help them out and help the world out by letting them hear that, you know, we're working on that. Dunham is Tommy's label, which is stuff that he's basically recording in his room, you know, and it's all musically, it's all the family, you know, it's guys from obviously the Dap Kings, the L. Michaels Affair, the Budos Band, whatever. I mean, it's all in the family, though. It'll be different guys on different records and stuff like that. I mean, he could probably tell you more about Dunham.
Okay, Dunham Records is pretty much a studio project I started out of my apartment. You know, I play a lot of playing a bunch of bands in New York, and it was kind of a chance for me to, like, each band has a specific sound. Got the Dap Kings, that's just kind of real straight ahead funk and soul. And the Budos band was real aggressive, kind of Afro influenced. Yeah, so, you know, soulful, but real, coming from Afrobeat and listening to lots of Ethiopian, but always attacking it heavy handedly. So I wanted to kind of make a record that was instrumental, but a lot, you know, same influences as the Budos band, some Ethiopian music and lots of African music and lots of soul music, but more relaxed. So, you know, and also pick and choose and just get, like, you know, all the dudes that I think from playing with different bands that had the sound that I would want for record to do. Or if nobody was there, I would sit around and play, make the whole track myself, you know, make a drum, play the drums, bass, guitar, and then bring in a horn section. And the horn section on the record, in the Menahan Street Band record, is Leon Michaels and Dave Guy on the whole record. It's the most consistent thing. The rhythm tracks are different track to track, but the horn section is always the same. And the only vocalist we've worked with so far is Charles Bradley. So if you know your 45 stuff, then The World Is Going Up in Flames is Charles's biggest hit to date.
Is it, was there two out so far? Is that right?
There's two 45s out. There's Make the Road by Walking, and there's the Charles Bradley, The World Is Going Up in Flames.
With the Jay-Z thing, when he sampled it for his last album, how did that actually come about?
It was, I think a fax came from Rockefeller Records that was like, can you meet us at 3 p.m., you know, on 6th Avenue and wherever, and come to Rockefeller Records and have a meeting with Jay-Z. And the first thing you have to do for them to clear a sample is you have to, I think you have to, like, okay the lyrics. Like, James Brown has a clause that you can't curse if you sample James Brown. So before, you know, you even negotiate, you just have to clear the sample of that. So the first thing we did was we went to Rockefeller, me, Neil, and Gabe, and we listened to the record. And then, then the lawyers worked it all out the next day. But it was wild, man. I made that record in my bedroom, and the B-side was written first. And I was just like, hey, I need an A-side for this single. So, you know, I had, like, a bunch of demos, picked a demo, brought Gabe and Homer came over, and we worked it out and played it. And then a year and a half later, we got a fax to go meet Jay-Z. It was crazy. And then it was like, it was the hottest song off his record. It was a big single in the States. I don't know if it was out here. But number one song in Rolling Stone of the year. And this is the watch that he gave me on that meeting.
Okay. Really?
Uh-huh. Rock-aware.
Nice. I noticed on the credits for the LP as well, there's a Jazzman. Do you know the label Jazzman?
Sure.
He sampled a Jazzman tune as well. I don't know what that was. Yeah, I don't even know what it was, because I've not listened to the album more than once. Binky Griptite.
Hey, how you doing?
Tell us about your 45s history. You're not just a novelty Christmas geezer, are you?
No, not at all. No, at least, well, we hope not. But so far, we've only got two 45s out, one being the Christmas tune, Stone Soul Christmas, backed with World of Love. And the second one being Melomatic Mood, backed with Melomatic Mood Part 2. What do I have coming up? That's a good question. We've got a lot of things in the can, the stuff that we've been working on, some of the songs that we've been performing for all these many years, which will come out perhaps someday on Naptone, but I don't know.
Binky doesn't want to talk about his accomplishments, but we're like, we just cut a great record.
It's beef, yo. Yeah, yeah. It's going to be a fight.
One Time You're Mine, which is one of the songs. What is it going to be? Backed with a Stroll.
Yeah, that's still up in the air. We'll see. What?
Hearing the dynamic, like, yeah, no, I don't think so.
What's your part in the Daptones, in the Dap Kings? Sorry, how often do you get that, the Daptones? Does that happen a lot? Yeah, I apologize. In England, idiots. What's your part in the Dap Kings, Brinky? What did you bring? What are you going to bring to the stage tonight?
Well, I'm the one of the guitar players and the MC. So I kind of just could introduce the band to the audience, introduce the audience to the band, and try to let the audience know what's expected of them. Because unfortunately, with a lot of live shows, is people treat them as though they're a passive experience. And so the first thing we have to do when we hit the stage is let them know that this is not a passive experience, and that it's okay for them to react to what we do. You know, it's not television. It's not just something that's going to happen regardless of what they do. You know, it's like, it's a very interactive experience.
Do you see yourselves as sort of like ambassadors of soul and funk then? Are you trying to recapture something or trying to generate something new?
We just do what we do, you know. We do it because we like it, you know, and we're very fortunate that lately, you know, more and more people have been paying attention to us. But, you know, we've been doing it for a long time. We were doing it when nobody was paying attention, you know, largely because we liked it. And to be quite honest, I never imagined that we'd be as popular as we are now. And we're getting more and more popular by the day, you know. It's stunning to me, actually.
What's going to make tonight's show, then, good for you? What are you looking for in the audience?
Well, what we're looking for in the audience is just, you know, beautiful people that have come to have a good time, you know, and, you know, blood alcohol level plays a part, of course. But, you know, it's I think it's going to be all good, you know. It's we're here to have fun. As long as the audience is here to have fun, then we'll all have fun.
Actually, I'm going to ask you all to finish off. Anything you're rating at the moment, either labels-wise, song-wise, old or new?
Other record labels?
Yeah. Okay, other record labels. Number one, Truth and Soul, also Brooklyn, New York. That's right, L. Michael's Affair. Actually, The Expressions is a new record coming out next winter. That's unbelievable. Lee Fields and The Expressions is going to be dope. I think the Buddha Music, French label, putting out all the Ethiopiques compilations, unbelievable. I think Soundway is an amazing label. I think Soundway from London? Where's Soundway from?
Brighton,
yeah. Soundway is unbelievable.
Soundway.
Soundway Records is putting out unbelievable African stuff. They put out this 10-inch of Mulatu Asake that is just killing on the dance floor. And then the Numero group we all love. Killing.
You've been hanging out with Jay-Z, you know?
What?
You've been hanging out with Jay-Z.
Right? Yeah, a little.
The Numero group.
A little. We got business meetings to attend. He owes me money.
Oh, it's good. Tom, was it? The Numero group is like doing amazing label compilations, I think. Just like really well thought out, great sounding records. Jazzman, of course, has always been doing great. I mean, there's so many. What's that label from that German label? Tectonic. There's also Tramp Records from. Yeah, but you know, there's so much music that it amazes me how much old, you know, especially old stuff is still being resurfaced every day. How many records were made between really like a small amount of time, even if it was like 65 to 72 or whatever, but there's so much music and there are people who are really have such a passion for that and digging up stuff and finding the a way to you know, license and put out masters. Even Vampy Soul just did this Eddie Bowe compilation, stuff I'd never heard was amazing. So there's, I mean, I wish it was, you know, the L. Michaels Affair, certainly Truth and Soul for new stuff. And even like Shadows label, Quantum. I mean, that it's been a while that Poets of Rhythm record. You know, just to talk about some newer stuff. But but just like I said, all the reissues that are happening are just amazing.
The Poets of Rhythm played in a tiny little bar in Manchester about a year ago now. And sort of no one knew they were playing. Some posters went up an hour before the gig. 50 people turned up. It was the most amazing gig I've ever seen in my life. It was like,
when was that?
About a year ago.
Huh. No, because I haven't heard them in a long time live, and I know that there's so many changes that have happened, and like those guys are always like searching and trying to do new styles of music. So that's good to hear that it was really good.
Before a girl like me can move on.
Right, Sharon, I'll say hello first.
How you doing, Jamie?
Last time I saw you in Manchester was October 2005. You had a stunning dress on. What you had to do to kick off your heels.
But what was the dress called?
It was gold.
You
had to kick off your heels.
I'm going to wear that again.
You had to kick off your heels and get on top of the speaker stands. Do you remember that?
No, I don't, but I probably kicked off my heels and got on plenty of speakers of, between 2005 and now.
Sharon, what are you going to bring us tonight, first of all?
What I've been bringing for the last 12, 13 years, just a bunch of soul, of this music that you can feel. You know, don't come in and think you're just going to stand there and don't want to get sweaty. You know, you got to come in here and get a little wet.
I'm pretty scared to stand near the front, actually, because last time you got the guy next to me to get up and dance with you, and he was an amazing dancer.
That's okay, man. I look in their eyes. I can tell when they want to dance, and I hope tonight we have some dancers out there. We'll see.
Okay, you've had the third album out for nearly a year now, is it, I think?
It came out October. October 6th.
It was delayed. I think it was originally April it was going to come out and delayed.
Then it pushed up to this. Then it was September, and then it came out October the 6th.
I noticed a difference in sound from the minute I put the needle on the record. Would you just tell us a little bit about that?
Well, basically what we was going for was we had other songs that would have taken us into like the 70s, but we was trying to get soul sound, that Stax, that Motown 68, 69 sound. So that's what that third album is about.
Okay, good stuff now. Soul, S-O-U-L. Political climate in America at the moment. All we hear about over here is Obama this and Bush that sort of thing. Politics has dropped into your tunes
Obama,
from here to there.
Clinton. Those are three major names. Then you got a little McLean up in McCain, but mainly it's the Bahamas. Bahama. Talking about the Bahamas, Obama and Clinton and you know, Bush need to get out. I mean, that's what I am. I mean, for years I followed the Clintons because they was Democrat and they was ones with the plans. But recently in the States, you know, the health care is very important in them. I mean, Clinton have been, you know, I felt at one time I was like with everyone else, she got more experience, blah, 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 blah. But when I listened to her, when she was debating with Obama and it was talking about the health, that's important to me. And I think Obama have a little bit more insight on talking about. I like his health plan, what he's talking about. Because there's a lot of poor black people, not only black people, there's a lot of people in America. That millions of Americans who not have health insurance, that's not good. Even myself, I just got basically health insurance coming through all of these unions, and I just got on from the SAG. Other than that, the last few years, I've been uninsured. Thank God I didn't get sick. And whenever I go to a doctor to buy medicine, just to get a checkup once a year, I spend money out of my butt, money that I was just barely started making here, you know. So, yeah.
It seems like people only realize that after Katrina as well.
Oh my God! We just went down in Louisiana, and the whole thing again. You know, when you go back, and I hate to go back there, but I just think about how it took them 6 days when it's no reason for them to have taken that long to get those poor people out of there. They could have been there like the next in 2 days. It should have been no more than 2 days. Actually, that night they should have been in there, you know. And we went down to Louisiana back at the House of Blues because we had supposed to have been there when Katrina hit. And we was just down there last summer, and it's so sad. I mean, thousands of people are still sleeping in tents and little made-up canvases under the train and under the freeways. It's horrible. Neighborhoods, you go down and they just abandoned. No one is there. They're not even trying to help out those poor people down there. And then they put them in homes, and the kids are now getting sick, asthma, because of something that they have the homes made up with some chemicals, and the homes is calling people to be sick. Come on.
As someone who is sort of touring the world effectively, you've got a voice there, haven't you? And you do sort of drop this in. I noticed last time, and I've seen some of your shows on YouTube, you drop this in and make people aware. So do you see yourself as an ambassador? You've got a job of sort of spreading the love here.
I know, it's just main thing is I'm not trying to be political, and I don't want to get into that political thing because I'm not. Yes, part of life, and that's why I thank God for music, and we can express it in our music or get something out. Like we did the song Taxes. What if we all stop paying taxes? I did not tell people to go out and stop paying taxes. That's not my point, you know. But I made them think about that. You know, you're spending this money, and they're taking our money, and they're buying and spending it in wars, and, you know, and I look at the price of our gas and the kids being uneducated. Now I can throw the health thing up in there. So, yeah, I had a little something to say about that. And then also the song This Land. I mean, people look at that song in the States and think that's folklore. It's one of those, oh, it's a great song. But that song came out in the 60s. when they was against the war in the Vietnam War. And if you really listen to the lyrics of that song, that's what it's about. It's not saying this land is all great and it's everyone's. Because I even said, they got signs of private property. Is that my land? And you go down to the church and about your welfare, and you see these people here, poor and homeless. And I'm thinking about the people in Katrina, and I even added that in. The people are homeless, sleeping in the street. So that's what that thing is about, that song. So those two, I sort of put those two together and got it out there. And then I go on about just singing about some good music, music that make people come out. When they come out to my shows, and me and the Dap Kings, whatever's on their mind, whatever's making them feel down and bad, I hope when they come to our show, they leave out of there and left those little things behind them for a little while, if it's just for a little while. But just the fact that they get a chance to be a little happy for maybe an hour or two.
So much so that you sold out about a month, maybe a month and a half ago. Are you happy with that?
Yeah, of course. I mean, yes. I mean, yeah. I would have been sad if I came in this place and it hadn't sold out. I think I wouldn't have performed. I'm like, nah, we don't need to be here. But no, I was just joking. But yeah, it's great. I mean, actually, since October, since we've been on the road since the third album, we haven't been at. We've been selling out. I mean, through Australia, everywhere. I mean, we have not been at a, knock it on wood. Yeah. We've been at a place that they have not sold out, and that's totally a blessing. That's God's blessing.
Do you feel a bit more satiated and happy now in 2008 than maybe even in 2005, 2003 with where the band is?
I am a little bit more happy now because everyone think last year was like the greatest year. Like for me and the Dap Kings, you know, y'all was buying Amy and Sharon, you did this movie with Denzel Washington. But they don't know that I had 24 deaths in my family, between close family and church friends. I mean, close friends, different ages, various things they died from. My brother had a major stroke. My other brother passed away right when I left and for New Year's Eve. I had to sing, had to go out and do 3 shows and come back home and bury my brother. Then I guess all my mom's had a stroke, you know. So, I mean, yeah. And now so far this year, I think this year's going to make up for last year. You know, she's fine. My mother's fine. I'm staying with my mother. I've been taking care of her and been around her since 2000. I moved with her to help her take care of my brother who passed away last year. So, yeah. So everything, she's fine. You know, she's not 100%. But, you know, I guess I'm out. I'm not married. I don't have kids. So my mother's my family, and I got to take care of her, you know.
Obviously, you're on tour pretty much full time. And when you're not on tour, you're recording. Do you get time to sort of sit back and write your own lyrics now?
No, I haven't. Actually, the years coming up, I've been so satisfied with what Bosco Man and the Dap Kings have been writing. It's not like I got to sit down and write something. See, a lot of people want to write, you know. I know you get the money and you write your publishing and all that kind of stuff, which is all good. You know, that's all going to come in due time because I know I do have a lot of stuff that's going to be written down. But the last few years, I've been like, you know, just do it. Just taking it. And I would sit down with Bosco and between my stories and someone's life or something that happened with someone in life, these songs come out of things that happened between us, maybe one or somebody in the band, or just life in general. Like the song, How Do I Let a Good Man Down? That wasn't about me, because if I got a good man, I'm not going to let him down. You understand? So that's, but that song is about someone else, one of the guys in the band, nice young ladies, but I'm not in love with her, you know, but, you know, I'm going to break this off, man. I'm going to let her down. Then next thing you know, Bosco comes up with, ding, 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 and I'll come in with scenes we've been getting on, How Do I Let a Good Man Down? And it was nice and it was joyful. So, yeah, so.
I think for me the tune is How Long Do I Have to Wait for You? It's heartbreaking and it's beautiful.
Now that was that. You might as well say I wrote that myself, but I didn't. But Bosco wrote it, but he knew it was something that was going on in my life and this person, and I waited. This person walked out the door and said, I'll see you Friday. And it was months. It was like about 9 months later he called me up and said, oh, I'm sorry. I'm like, yes, you are sorry. So that's How Long Do I Have to Wait. And that was more or less, that was about me. That was true. That was good. Yeah.
Okay, just to finish off, fourth album might be a way where you might not even have thought about writing with Bosco or planning it, whatever.
Were you gonna and Tell Me, that song, Tell Me You Love Me, yeah. That's me and Neil. You see my name on there, Sharon Jones and Neil. I told you, coming around. You know, as the years come up, I'll probably, there's more stuff in my head that I'm going to want to come up with and write and do. But right now, until my life, you see, writers, you have to, everyone is not everything, you know. Some people can write. Some people can sing. Some people can play this. You do what you're good at. And right now, I'm good at bringing alive what someone else is singing for me and doing. But I got some stuff in store. I did write a song, and you've probably heard it, DJ Greyboy.
Actually, I wanted to bring it up.
yeah.
I talked to Matt, the tour manager, about it, and he mentioned some publishing thing going on with it.
I didn't get nothing for that. You know, that was my first mistake, you know, and it's okay.
But what I was going to tell you is about 4 weeks ago, I played a night called Sketch City in Manchester where they have artists doing stuff all the time. And one of the artists, straight away, dancing up and down, she keeps coming running up. Thank you so much for playing that Sharon Jones song. She didn't say thank you for the Grey Boy song.
See? Thank you, because she knew that was Sharon Jones. You know what I'm saying? And, yeah, Grey Boy, you know, Ubiquity, they did good. But I think if they would have treated me a little better and did the right thing, the right way, broke it down 50-50, like, because I should have got some of that publishing. It's sad. Yeah, I just got paid a few thousand bucks, and that's it. And that song, I mean, that's the first song I've written since maybe the 80s or something, you know, because I wrote a song, a gospel, and so Call on God, I've never performed. I might put that on the album maybe next time, just like I threw Answer Me. And that song, Humble Me, that's about my life, you know, and Bosco wrote that because he knows me, and he wrote a song like, whoa, you're just talking about me. Like, yeah, and that's why I can sing it, and I can feel it, because it's about me. I'm humble. I am very grateful for my voice, for my talent. You know, for I get on that stage and I have the energy that I have. You know, I don't know how anybody else feel at 52. I'll be 52 next month. And I don't think you see too many 52 people jumping around like that for an hour and a half or 2 hours on the stage. So that's a blessing. So I'm very humble for that.
What are you looking for from Manchester tonight, Sharon?
I'm just looking for the crowd to come out, and it's a Friday night, and get their worth, get what they paid for, to come out of here and leave here smiling and happy, said, wow, that was a great show. Can't wait till they come back again.
Listen, I'll let you get off. Will you be coming back to the UK anytime soon? Because you sold out so quickly here. There's still people banging on the doors of the streets.
You know, we basically came to the UK this time. I mean, we didn't really put a lot of jobs in. The main thing we was doing is Joel's Holland. We're doing that Tuesday. Tuesday is rehearsal, and Wednesday we're going to do the show live. I think we go on Wednesday night, 10 o'clock, so tell everybody, make sure y'all check that out.
Yeah. BBC Two, I think it is.
Huh? Okay, I have no idea, but yes. They'll know. Everybody out here say, Joel, they're hollering. Oh, we know, so they should know.
Yeah, it's massive.
Yeah, I heard. That's great.
Like the Letterman thing.
Yeah, we just did the Letterman. So, you know, now we did Letterman, now we're doing Joel Holland.
Well, have a fantastic one tonight.
Thank you, and thank you for interviewing us and being interested and loving what we do. Thank you.
Yeah, the gig was pretty good. I heard a lot of good tunes and a lot of quality tunes.
She's pretty good at singing, isn't she?
That's the best gig I've ever been to in all my life, ever. It was amazing. She's got such a cool voice.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, James Brown's his sister or something, wants to see.
Sharon Jones rocks.
Yes, Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings. It'll take 500 people to realise, 500 gigs later, that was the show that stood out. Would it in the house? Mr. Crowhead, aka The Nudge, aka Mr. Werther's Originals. Later.
She was amazing. I can't believe it's the best thing I've ever seen in all my life. Oh, Sharon Jones.
Hi, this is Sharon Jones of Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings here on Groovement with Agent J.
Gentlemen, on behalf of the Dap Kings to the Sharon Jones, I just have to say, thank you very much for coming. Good night. We love you.